does a woman come out of hiding to talk about her childhood sexual abuse and what it was that helped her come through to the other side? Welcome to It's Her Turn. I'm your host, Dr. Kate Dow, and I am very, very blessed to say that we have Deb Hansen here today, who's going to share with us what this is about for her and how she's doing this. Deb is a certified intuitive coach since 2005, and she's going to bravely share her story in public today to help you, the listener who might be going through this and wants to know, how can I possibly come to terms and get through to the other side? Deb, it's so great to have you here.
Well, thank you. It's great to be here.
I just want to say that to me, this is the most powerful thing about doing this podcast, is being able to let people come share their powerful personal stories that allow us to know that it's possible to come through, and how there's resources out there. There's different things that can help us inside of us and outside of us that we just don't always know. And you've been doing this work as an intuitive coach for quite a long time, so I'm sure you come across this.
You know, not as often as you might think. And I probably will be coming across it much more now that I'm going to be more open about it, because it's not something that I talk to very many people about.
So tell me a little bit about that. What made you feel ready to come on this podcast and share your story in public today?
Well, this might sound a little weird, but as an empath, I not only feel connected to people, but I also feel this very universal connection. And I pay attention to signs I get from the universe, and I pay particular attention to invitations. And when I got your invitation to talk about being a guest on the podcast, I thought, wow, what should I talk about? And, you know, there's the typical laundry list of more superficial things that people might share and feel safe sharing. And I thought to myself, what if I did something really scary and shared what I don't normally share? And, you know, I thought about it for a little bit, and I thought, I think it's time. So here I am.
Well, I just acknowledge you. And I do agree with you that sometimes those invitations just come across our path. And the fact that you gave some thought to it and you really listened to your own, you know, inner voice, that perhaps this is the time to share this, you know, that who might need to hear this, that I, you know, wouldn't have an opportunity to tell to. So I just want to acknowledge this. Yes, it's a big deal. And I do feel like it's time for us as women to step out of the shadows of our stories of abuse and trauma so that they are no longer holding us captive. Does it feel like that a little bit to you?
It really does. What is that saying about, you know, we're only as sick as our secrets?
Right.
And this has been a big secret in my life, and I just don't want to. I want to feel like what it really feels like on the other side of sharing it in a big way. So, you know, part of it's selfish, I think.
Well, you've done the work. You've done the work to come to the other side and be ready today to do this. So. What do you feel ready to share a little bit about what you came through and what that was about?
Well, the sexual abuse for me was in my family, so incest. Okay. Happened at a very young age, over a period of, you know, I was so young. I would say about 5 years, from age 5 to 10.
Okay.
And it was very traumatic once I learned that I was being abused, because in the beginning, I was a little kid, I really didn't have any idea.
Of course, right?
If that's what it was. Yeah. And
yeah, we don't know anything about it.
I really didn't. I mean, you know, I guess these days kids learn about the birds and the bees a little earlier, but not in my era. Mm-hmm. Things usually weren't discussed until a girl was about ready to menstruate, and then it was, bam, here's the talk, here's the stuff, away you go, you know?
So how did you make sense of it when you were a kid, or when you realized that this wasn't okay? Were you able to share it with someone, or?
I did a lot of talking to myself, I think, quite honestly. And I, you know, making sense of it is not really what I did at first. What I did was I realized, okay, this is abuse. I have to figure out a way to stop it. And I confronted my abuser in a physical way and let him know there was going to be no more of it.
Wow. And this was at age 10?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, Deb, that's powerful.
Yeah, it was a big moment. It was a big moment. And it took him a while to get the message, actually.
Sure, I bet. And how did you handle that?
You know, I don't remember a lot about it, but I think there was probably some sort of veiled threat involved, like, you know, hey, I'm not going to put up with this. And if you think I'm going to keep quiet about it, if you do anything more, you're mistaken.
Okay. So
you know, I think I kind of, I did what I had to do. I think I threatened him.
Wow. That's really quite stunning. So it's almost like your own inner parent showed up and said, no more. You don't get to do this. And if you don't stop, then I'm going to tell. Was that mm-hmm. sort of the message?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my
God. That's
gosh.
Such a great way to put it, too. I love how you framed that.
Wow. That's very powerful. So there was that part of you that could step into that place and take charge that way, that I think for a lot of women that I've worked with early sexual abuse, they aren't able to do that. They're very overwhelmed and not able to have a voice even about what's happening or even feel believed, right? They aren't even believed when they go to their family. Now, mm-hmm. did you at some point let your the rest of your family know?
There was some discussion with my mother, and her attitude was, you know, denial, complete denial. That can't possibly be true.
Right. And that's a, like a straight up common response of family members, especially parents, who just say, no, that's not possible. I'm not willing to acknowledge that reality. And so therefore you're making this up.
Yeah. And what a total negation of a human being.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's really, you know, they say in, psychology, like trauma often isn't just what you survived the actual event. It's what happens after the event mm-hmm. when you finally talk to people or, you know, who shows up to help support you after that event. And right. So for you to be told like that's not true can be the bigger traumatizing part of like, oh, not only did I go through this, but now you're not believing me.
Right.
Oh my gosh. How did you get through that?
Well, I wish I could say gracefully, but I think my response was, all right, then I guess I have to be the adult in the family since no one else seems to be living in reality and do it myself.
So that really was, again, that sort of inner part of you that stepped into being the parent in the family.
Mm-hmm.
And you were able to threaten the abuser to back off. And then you let your mom know who didn't believe you. And I can't imagine what that was like for you.
Well, yeah, it was devastating for sure. And, you know, layered on top of that was my Catholic upbringing, which I went to Catholic school for 12 years. So my awareness of the abuse came at a time, you know, when I was in school every day and hearing about mortal sins and all that stuff. And I was convinced I was going to hell. So, you know, on top of the abuse, the denial, there was the message that came from the church that was like, well, you got a problem here and
yeah,
you know, there's no fixing it.
Right. And you're, you know, you're to blame because, you know, whether you're a child or an adult, if you're, you know, engaging in sex in a whatever out of marriage, you're sinning, you're bad, you're going to hell. Like, oh my gosh, that was on top of it. So, you know, and I find that, again, that's another layer of a system in your life that could have been supportive, but instead had these, you know, strong beliefs about this is, you know, black and white. You're either a sinner or you're not. And that must have been incredibly challenging as a young girl.
It was.
How did you manage to work your relationship with the church out? I know when we talked at some point earlier that you mentioned that you were very curious about the mystical side of religion, and that somehow became a safe place to connect.
Yeah, and that was actually, you know, again, from a very young age. So I had those two competing visions of the church. It felt to me like the church was not a safe place, but the mysticism was the safe place.
Yeah.
So that direct connection that I felt, that holiness, was still there, but, you know, there was no way I was going to talk to a nun or a priest or a teacher or anyone connected with that ecosystem about what was going on.
And again, you had some very powerful higher power parts of you helping you, because for many children who go through that, they do look to that system and then they get judged and shamed again. So, some part of you knew to not go there, but to hold that your own personal spiritual connection that was so present for you that helped you stay connected even within that ecosystem. How brilliant is that?
Well, it got me through.
Yeah. That was part of your major resources. If we look at what is it that helped you through, whether that's mind, body, or spirit, having your own spiritual experience and knowing sounds like it was incredibly supportive.
Yeah. But again, it was very lonely.
Yeah.
You know, it was not something I would share with anyone else. Even that part of me, because people would have thought that was a little weird as well, I think.
Mm-hmm. So how did you navigate your family life? If your mom was denying it and the perpetrator was hiding out, what else helped you get through that time? Or was it later once you got to leave home?
Well, the thing that I did, you know, I look back on and I just kind of threw myself into academics. Became an outstanding student, you know, had to form some sort of a piece of wholeness. That sounds like an oxymoron, and it is, but it was kind of something to hang my hat on.
Sure.
So I was known for, you know, something else externally. You know, that was my identity in the world, was the good student. And then when I went off to college, you know, I really started becoming aware that how abnormal my family really was. and that other people had other ways they went about their lives in the world. And I just, you know, started listening and learning.
And at that point, you were just able to kind of separate from your family and sort of not look to them to support you. You were having another kind of support with, you know, your peers and being in school and the education system.
Right.
Like. Yeah.
Well, I mean, they were never, to be clear, any true emotional support. In fact, you know, my father was actually an alcoholic. Mm-hmm. And emotionally and a little bit physically abusive. So I knew from the time that I graduated from college, I got a job, I moved out on my own, and I ended up moving, you know, 1,000 miles away.
Smart, right?
Yeah. Like, it's like, I'm out of here.
Yeah. Let's get some space from that one. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And did you talk about it with friends at that time, or was this still a big secret that you, you know, kept very close to
your probably
heart?
Really never talked about it until I got into therapy, which mm-hmm. was in my 30s.
And how helpful was that for you as a path to healing?
It was a beginning. Mm-hmm. It wasn't the only thing I was seeing a therapist for, because as you can imagine, you know, my psyche was a little twisted from all that. So I had a lot of things to sort out. And, you know, it's eventually, well, I studied psychology in college, you know, no accident there. And I didn't pursue an advanced degree because at the time I didn't like the, programs, you know, it was all about behaviorism and mm-hmm. I'm like, I'm not so enamored of statistics and experiments and things like that.
Right, right.
You know, I wanted real human stories.
Right.
It wasn't there at the time. So I ended up going off into business, and that's when I got the opportunity to move 1,000 miles away. And, you know, so it was a very, you know, circuitous kind of route to healing. I quit going to the Catholic Church, but I did maintain a connection, establish a connection with Unity Church. And they're pretty big on A Course in Miracles, which uh-huh. was something I studied for a few years.
Yeah, so that was a great support because mm-hmm. it's all about how you perceive reality and how you relate to it. So that gave you another lens to see things.
Yeah, and gradually, you know, throughout my life, I've always kind of like gone deeper. And I started studying coaching, I don't know, around 2002, 2003, something like that. And that's where I really had the experience of seeing people get very authentic with each other. And, at that point, I started sharing with friends.
And that's what you ultimately got into doing, was coaching, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. I mean, it's a very powerful thing to be in a coaching engagement with a good coach. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I started studying coaching, I got a coach, and I was probably also in therapy at the same time. I love therapy too, but it's a different kind of thing.
Definitely. I mean, having different ways to work with change and growth and healing is the opportunity that we're so quite lucky at this time to have. So I support that you were able to find lots of different resources for yourself.
And women's circles too. I got involved in some women's circles that, I didn't necessarily talk about specifically sexual abuse. I more just said abuse. You know, I wasn't willing to kind of let the big secret out, but it was comforting just to be listened to and to to be heard and to be validated finally.
I bet it was incredibly powerful because you hadn't been validated by your family, by your church community. You didn't really have that sort of support. So to be at this place now where not only were you getting into coaching and counseling for yourself, but this became a path that you wanted to follow and become an intuitive coach.
And here we are today.
And here we are.
Yeah.
Yeah. So looking back as you're sharing this story now, what do you see about yourself that perhaps you didn't notice so much before about how you navigated this journey?
Well, you know, when you reflected back to me that I parented myself through it, I'd never really looked at it that way, but I think you're exactly right.
Yeah.
And how in the world I did that. I mean, it truly, I'm sitting here kind of astonished about that.
Yeah, I think, you know, there was a part of you that was able to show up and take that step because nobody else in your life was going to do that. And that sometimes is the upside of being in a, you know, dysfunctional substance abuse system that we grow up in, is that we learn how to take those steps for ourselves and find the resources that are going to be there for us. And you certainly did that. And I feel like that's a powerful part of your story today, to be able to share with women as they're navigating, like, how do I even talk about my story, let alone really understand how I made my way through that? What would you want to say to a woman that may be going through this right now and listening? What would you want them to know?
Well, I think first of all, that I believe you, that this is something that, you know, it's just not right. It shouldn't happen to anyone. And, the best thing you can do, I think, is to, find a safe place to begin talking about it and healing from it. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, there are a lot more resources that are common and out in the open now than there were back when I was going through the abuse.
Right. So are you talking about like counseling and coaching, or what other resources are you thinking of?
Well, you know, I remember a woman that I coached when I lived in Michigan. I took her to the YWCA had a sexual assault program. I mean, I literally drove her there, kind of kidnapped her and took her there.
Yeah.
So things like that. I mean, there are, you know, these nonprofits that can be of assistance.
Definitely. Right? Like most people have maybe some kind of rape crisis center, or they have a crisis hotline that you can call. And those hotlines in each state often have resources in your community and places to start reaching out to and not feel so alone. So those crisis numbers are really helpful that you can just find in your state.
And yeah, I mean, you know, just Google it, right? Yeah. I mean, the internet wasn't around back then either.
Right. We didn't have the Google. We didn't have that like vast internet to find out how to get to the next step. So that is a huge difference. And can you tell me a little bit how this journey has informed your work with women that you're doing now?
Well, it feels like it's more informed me as a human being. And certainly, you know, I have great empathy for any kind of suffering. And I guess it's no accident that I work in the area of empowering women. Mm-hmm. because I think that's so much what this is about. As a child, I felt powerless.
Yeah.
And had to work through that powerlessness as a young adult. And really, it's only now that I feel like I'm truly coming into my power. You know, it's been a very gradual thing.
Definitely. And so tell me a little bit about the program that you offer women around that sense of empowerment and life purpose.
Well, you know, I always kind of laugh at myself when people ask me about my coaching, because I guess it might be like I don't necessarily feel like I have a specialty. But because I'm such an intuitive and really, you know, my work is for women. I've known that, you know, not that I haven't coached men, but it doesn't happen too often. It had to do with empowering and talking about it. It's just such an individual process. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm that safe place for people to talk about the places in their lives where they feel powerless.
Right.
Or less than empowered. And, typically the work is about helping people, understand that they have limiting beliefs around their own power. Helping them work through that to a place where they feel more comfortable in their own skin, mm-hmm. however they define that.
Right. Yeah, sounds like it's similar to how I kind of describe my work too. And I think that's how we ended up meeting, was sort of having those similar ways that we like to support women. And mm-hmm. so I think it's just very important to recognize your contribution in sharing this story publicly today. And I just want to honor you again and thank you for being here to break the silence, right? Break the shame and the sense of hiding our challenges and our struggles, especially when it's around abuse. I think as women, we can still tend to hold on to that as, a shadow, we could say.
Sure.
You know, it's a shadow that we're still carrying that, well, I feel bad about myself that I went through this, instead of like, oh my God, can you believe I came through this and I am an empowered, authentic woman coaching other women now? Like it's like we all
and
need
isn't
a little.
That the miracle of yes. how it happens though. I mean, there's always, you know, out of all that mess and misery, there's always something amazing that comes forth.
I know it is. And it's a lesson that I think we have to learn multiple times, to trust that the hardships often lead to incredible journeys of joy and growth, but it's still not easy to accept them when they come along. Deb, how can people find you if they want to work with you or learn more about your work?
Well, I do have a website, and it's lifesupportcoaching.com.
Great.
I've got a Facebook group of the same name. Is it appropriate for me to share my email and contact information, or is...
Well, we'll have the links for people to find your site on the show notes.
Sure.
And so I think sharing your website is great, and your Facebook page, and we'll have those available in the show notes for our listeners. And is there any other parting words that you have for women, or just, you know, in honor of having shared this story today? How are you doing? How are you feeling about this?
Well, I'm feeling pretty emotional. I'm also feeling pretty pleased with myself, to be honest. I really feel like there's going to be some blessing for me in all of this. And, you know, I guess my message to women is it's okay to talk about it. And if someone isn't empathetic, you're not talking to the right person. Keep trying.
Great.
You know, keep moving until you find your path.
Yeah, exactly. Keep going until you find the right people. Mm-hmm. And that is so true, because sometimes we aren't going to find the first time or the second time. We're going to have to keep on knowing that we deserve to be heard, we deserve to be supported and listened to and validated. And that sometimes just takes a little time to find those people, to find the right connections. But Deb, I just want to thank you again so much for being here and choosing to take my invitation as an opportunity to share your story and be here as a model for how women can face their childhood trauma and come through to the other side. It's really been amazing. Thank you.
Well, thank you. And I guess a final thought is, I think as we, you know, this is a healing step for me. And as we heal ourselves, we heal others.
Exactly. Exactly. We're all in this together. So to you out there, listeners, I loved having you here with us today. And I do hope you're taking away some wisdom and inspiration that encourages you on your journey, whatever that may be in your personal growth or in your business life. And please remember to subscribe, share, and give us a review if you're so moved. I'm your host, Dr. Kate Dow, and I want to encourage you to take your turn, find your voice, own your truth, and claim your power.